Welcome to Earth Eats. I'm Annie Corrigan.
You know, people have this idea that the farmer's market is super expensive. And if you're a low-income person, that you don't belong. And I have, you know, worked day in and day out for the past 2 years to try and work on initiatives that will change that attitude.
Mallory Rickbile is the Community Wellness Coordinator for Clay, Greene, and Owen counties in southern Indiana. We talked to her today about the ripple effect of bringing more SNAP dollars to the small farmer's market in Linton. Some farmers are discovering that there's money to be made in grazing different animals in the same pasture land, and with Arlen Llewellyn of Function Brewing, a vegan veggie burger. Mark Chilla with our news update first off.
Hundreds of Midwest farmers are complaining of damage to their crops caused by the herbicide dicamba. That's according to data compiled by the University of Missouri. In that state, farmers have reported damage to more than 300,000 acres. Farmers spray dicamba to kill weeds. Some varieties of soybeans are genetically engineered to withstand it. But dicamba is suspected of drifting in the wind to neighboring farms and damaging some 2.5 million acres nationwide. Across the country, more than 1,400 complaints have been filed with state regulators. The state of Arkansas has temporarily banned farmers from using the chemical. Missouri had also temporarily banned its sale and use, but has since lifted the ban after developing new guidelines for dicamba. And a recent report from the investment firm Cowen is predicting a whopping 79% increase in the home food delivery market over the next 5 years. Consider how many of those meals are packaged with disposable plastic containers, utensils, and straws. It's a staggering amount of plastic waste that doesn't go away. Clean Water Action, a California-based environmental group, found the biggest source of litter in the San Francisco Bay Area was fast food, with disposable plastic bags, containers, and utensils making up nearly half of all street litter. Much of that plastic ends up in the ocean, where currents swirl into maelstroms of waste that threaten marine life. The Pacific Gyre between Hawaii and San Francisco now covers an area the size of Texas and contains about 3.5 million tons of trash. The UN also estimates that the world's oceans currently contain 8 million tons of plastic. A report from the Ocean Conservancy said rapid economic growth in developing countries has spurred this wave of disposable food packaging. The report said worldwide, 60% of all marine plastic in oceans can be traced to just five countries: China, Indonesia, the Philippines, Thailand, and Vietnam. There are plenty of success stories. Ireland reduced its plastic bag consumption by 90% between 2001 and 2011 after imposing a 37-cent plastic bag tax. In the U.S., more than 130 anti-bag regulations are in effect, according to the Reuse the Bag advocacy group. Chicago banned bags in 2014. Washington, D.C. and Dallas now charge for bags. And in 2013, a study showed that after San Jose, California enacted a bag ban, there was a near 90% drop in the amount of plastic in storm drains and almost 60% less in the streets. Head on over to eartheats.org to read more from Taylor Killow and Chad Bouchard. And on Earth Eats Twitter, you'll find even more news stories that caught our attention this week.
We're at Earth Eats. Mark, thanks.
Over and out.
The demand for beef, pork, and chicken raised on smaller farms closer to home is growing. Now, some Midwest farmers are exploring how to graze livestock to meet those demands while still earning a profit. Harvest Public Media's Amy Mayer takes a look.
Wendy Johnson runs Joya Food Farm on land she rents from her family, which has a conventional corn and soybean operation near Charles City, Iowa. She lifts the corner of a mobile chicken tractor. It's a lightweight plastic frame covered in wire mesh that has corralled her month-old meat chickens for a few days.
before we just let them out in day range, we make sure that they know, understand that this is their home so that they go back into it.
Starting now, they will be free to forage and peck the surrounding area during the day. The portable coop keeps them safe at night.
I have watched them eat. They really love the tips of the new grass and then the clover flowers, the white clover flowers.
Johnson has other big plans. She'll rotate sheep through a series of small paddocks, and these meat chickens will follow. They'll eat what they please and fertilize with their waste. She plans for pigs to eventually graze on organic crop fields where their rooting will help improve soil health. Many farmers like Johnson are looking for creative ways to keep acres productive while also improving cropland and wildlife habitat. One possible solution, using grazing livestock to enhance the land they roam.
Multi-species open pasture system has a higher level of animal welfare.
That's Will Harris of White Oak Pastures in Bluffton, Georgia. He's gone big on this method.
I believe it is more regenerative for the land, and I think it benefits rural economies.
He spoke to Johnson and dozens of other Midwest farmers in Iowa and described how he came to pasture-raise cattle, hogs, sheep, goats, rabbits, and five types of poultry. To reap the benefits, Harris says, a farmer has to be savvy about developing a market for high-end meats. Over 10 years, he had to stomach millions of dollars in loans.
And today it's cash flow positive and profitable. Not obscenely cash flow positive and profitable. We have to watch every penny, but it's working.
This is not how most livestock is raised. Modern farms look for economies of scale. They focus on one animal, developing expertise and investing in infrastructure. That keeps costs low for us at the grocery store, but it can also generate tons of waste and deplete the soil. Here in the Corn Belt, farmers raise massive amounts of corn and soybeans to feed these big livestock operations. In many areas, the prairie has been gone for decades. But grazing animals is possible, says Adam Janke, an Extension Wildlife Specialist at Iowa State University. He says conservation grazing is a real thing.
And these are these neat examples where people are using the behavior of domestic livestock to mimic, for example, what elk would have eaten or what bison would have eaten, or even to do totally novel things like control invasive species.
Cattle, sheep, and goats all can play a part. But Janke says when, where, and for how long the animals graze needs to be carefully controlled. Moving animals through a series of paddocks, as Wendy Johnson does, is called rotational grazing.
Rotational grazing systems are really productive for wildlife because there's a combination of rest, recovery, and grazing.
Janke says that can allow for a variety of native plants to grow back, which in turn attracts birds and pollinators and helps restore the area to something resembling the former tall grass prairie. Johnson may never restore prairie, and she can't let her hogs roam freely as they do in Will Harris's Georgia woodland. But his example gives her hope that she can care for her livestock, restore soil health, attract wildlife, and turn a profit. It's not just a dream. It can be a business plan.
And that he is doing well, it just tells me that we have a future and we have a place in agriculture today.
And that's what she was looking for when she returned to Iowa after many years away. Amy Mayer, Harvest Public Media.
Find more from Amy and all of her reporter colleagues at harvestpublicmedia.org. This week, the Food Research and Action Center released data that shows that rural and small-town Americans are more likely to use SNAP benefits than people living in cities. The average, nationally, is 16% of those households benefiting from food stamps. In Indiana, it's about 12% of rural and small-town people. Zooming into Greene County, Indiana, population 32,211, 13.2% of that population uses SNAP. And that's the scene for our conversation today with Mallory Rickbile, a community wellness coordinator who works in Greene County. Her job is essentially to help develop environments in rural communities that support healthy eating and active living. In part, that means enticing SNAP users to spend money at local farmers markets. When she started the job in December 2015, she'd actually never been to this rural southern Indiana county.
There's this story that I think about when I drive out to Greene County is there's that, you know, country mouse, city mouse tale where I kind of use that narrative as a means of frustration. But like after a while, you begin to like, you're like, no, that's ridiculous. We're all just mice, you know, like we all have like, we're more similar than we are different.
This was the preconception she brought with her to the job. Along the way, she's discovered that changing the narratives about food stamp users and rural poverty has been tricky, but important. Rick Bile speaks with Lee Bush of Indiana University's Food Institute.
You've mentioned to me how food insecurity is disproportionately affecting some more than others. Mm-hmm. What are the factors that make people more susceptible to food insecurity?
Yeah, so in rural communities, we see, and I think it's actually, this is fairly typical across, you know, the nation, but we see the recipients of SNAP are the working, essentially, are families, households with children or children under the age of 18. That's about half mm-hmm. of the SNAP recipients in Greene County. A quarter of the recipients have a person in the household who's older than the age of 65. Wow. And then a third have at least two members of the household working within the past 12 months. And so it's very much the working poor, the families who are just trying to make ends meet and who are experiencing food insecurity situationally throughout the year. There is kind of this narrative, and I do hear it from time to time, that people who are, you know, who utilize SNAP are, you know, people are taking advantage of the system. And that's really just not the case. Or it's individual decisions, individual behaviors. And, you know, it's education is what's needed. That's the most difficult and perhaps frustrating conversation to have in this community, especially when it comes from the people who have a lot of ability to impact that system. Mm. You know, those narratives are super harmful for policies that actually do a lot to help families and community food systems to be able to develop itself to be healthier. And so it's like, I mean, that's so much what's going on right now. And this is like this, you know, when you start seeing it and you start looking for it, you see it everywhere. And I think that's the origin of angst when it comes to doing this work.
That is interesting. I feel like I hear a lot of those narratives, especially now. Do you deal a lot with homelessness and addiction at all?
I mean, it does come up because I think there is this sort of stigma of poverty that comes with, you know, people who have, you know, substance abuse issues or homelessness. Rural poverty looks a little different in that it's a lot more dispersed and it's difficult to locate and it's harder to see. But as far as I do have conversations with people in the community, and I talk about the necessity for programs like Market Bucks, which is a program that I work really actively with. And invariably, you know, that conversation at some point turns to, oh, like, you know, well, we don't want, you know, people who are, you know, users to come and utilize all of our program resources. And, you know, I'm really like, I'm trying the best way to encounter those sort of harmful assumptions mm-hmm. about people and what it, I mean, ultimately, it's a system where the system has failed and there are people who are more vulnerable. And so, you know, I'm trying to lead that conversation to, you know, why are we attacking the most vulnerable people than having a conversation about the broad system that is perpetuating and not allowing for a safety systems when people do run into issues.
Yeah, yeah. It sounds like there's a lot of dialogue that likes to focus on the things that we can see and touch, whereas systems are complicated.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes it probably all the more difficult for you to do your job because it is such a complicated thing to explain. But you mentioned market bucks given by, again, the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP. How many of these market bucks are actually spent at the farmers market, and what are the barriers that keep people from using them?
Well, so last year, so that was the first full year that I was associated with the program. We took the program from about $200 in reimbursements to about $1,500 in reimbursements. So when
Wow.
we matched that, that became $3,000 spent at our Lytton Farmers Market. We have about 14 to 18 vendors in
so
a given
what you're saying
Saturday.
Is that the farmers are doing a lot better because of the SNAP benefits.
Oh, absolutely.
And that's because what do you mean by matching in terms of market
right.
bucks?
So what we do is we say if you have your Hoosier Works card and you come to our farmers market and you take out $10 from your account, we will give you an additional $10 to spend on SNAP eligible food or food that, you know, the WIC program supports, which is fresh fruits and vegetables, or the Senior Farmers Market program. Again, fresh fruits and vegetables. And so that has been useful to us in helping us get more vegetable vendors and healthy food vendors
yeah.
at our farmers market. And sometimes when you are getting a farmers market started, and it's really you have a lot of your home-based vendors and you have your prepared food vendors. And so in order to have a really like well-curated market, I guess.
Farmers at the farmer's market.
Farmers at the farmer's market. You need to be able to create sort of that extra demand for the crops that they're bringing. So we have these programs where we're actively trying to create this environment to say, no, we need to change attitudes. To say, you know, people have this idea that the farmer's market is super expensive and everything is organic. And if you're a low-income person, that you don't belong at the market. And I have, you know, worked day in and day out for the past 2 years to try and work on initiatives that will change that attitude.
Yeah.
Direct incentives are the most effective, where you can put up posters and say, double your money, and people are instantly there and they're paying attention and they'll come back week after week after week.
And these people are buying too, which is
absolutely,
you know, incentivizes that symbiotic relationship with a consumer and producer.
Yeah. Exactly. And even like to make it even at another level to it, when the farmers are bringing a ton of produce to the market, then we also see an uptake when they do really well in gleaning, which means that they're donating produce to the pantries for people who have or who are, you know, encountering food insecurity in their lives. But perhaps they don't meet the federal income requirement to apply for SNAP.
Yeah, I've noticed actually quite a renewed interest in gleaning or collecting unwanted or ugly produce and donating it. But I know this can also be logistically difficult.
Mm-hmm.
What have been your experiences with transporting, finding, and using gleaned foods?
Well, when I first started in Greene County, I had this attitude like, okay, you know, once we get the food pantries to come pick up the food at the farmers market and we get people on board and we donate, you know, we make it worth everyone's time, like, done. You know?
Yeah.
Case closed. Good job,
easy,
Mallory.
All the problems in the system solved.
But then there was a few weeks where I was the person who was bringing the food to the food pantries to try and or just because the person who normally did it wasn't there that week. And I noticed like, oh, there are things like we need to have containers so that the lettuce doesn't wilt within the first hour before people can come and actually use the produce.
Mm-hmm.
And the root vegetables, like we have to take the tops off so that they don't become shriveled little
raisins
of beets. So, you know, and it's like this. And then, of course, like you have most of the pantries, all of the pantries in Greene County are volunteer run. So you have, you know, people who are, you know, that come one day a week. And so you have to like have this constant like network. And so, you know, it's again, it's that whole like it's a part of the system that exists as it relates to food. And like, you know, the minute that you start pulling like on one thread, you notice like, oh, it's connected to another ton of threads that, you know, make it somehow more nuanced and more complicated.
Do you have any success stories that you think have really worked for you in the last year?
Let's see. Well, I've been working with our master gardeners in Greene County and getting them on board with talking about food insecurity. We got a grant to develop our donation garden at the fairgrounds. And so we took this garden that ran 2 months of the season last year and basically grew a ton of not a literal ton, but a lot. I think like 50 pounds of green beans. And we turned that into a, you know, garden that we are doing season extension. We're doing at least 25 different varieties of crops throughout the year. I think we are on schedule to donate 700 pounds of produce to local pantries. And so our master gardener, a woman named Lila, I mean, she is the powerhouse behind this organization. She's out there at the garden, like picking squash beetles off of the plants. That success becomes in building our systems, in trying to develop knowledge about food insecurity and how it manifests itself in rural communities, and then using that community to, you know, change attitudes and build resources and find solutions in the small rural communities that we work with.
Thank you, Mallory, so much for being with us today. It's a real pleasure.
Thank you for having me, and I've been delighted.
Mallory Rickbile is the Purdue Extension Community Wellness Coordinator for Greene, Owen, and Clay counties in Indiana. She was in the Earth Eat studios with Lee Bush of Indiana University's Food Institute. After that conversation, I just had to visit the Linton Farmers Market. So that's what we do next week. Coming up today, a veggie burger that doesn't skimp on the heat. Production support for Earth Eats comes from Elizabeth Rue, enrolled agent and owner of Personal Financial Services, providing tax preparation for individuals and businesses located on the Beeline Trail. More information at personalfinancialservices.net. Need more coffee roasters? A woman-owned coffee bar and roastery dedicated to roasting organic, direct trade, and fair trade coffee from small-scale farmers around the world. On the east side of Bloomington, corner of Pete Ellis and Longview, needmoreroasters.com. And Charles Schwab & Company Incorporated. With a local branch on Morton Street in Bloomington, independent branch leader Jeremy Zeichner, CFP, offers personalized financial plans matched to investors' goals. More at schwab.com/Bloomington. I'm Annie. This is Earth Eats. Arlen Llewellyn likes to cook vegan food, and she likes to make it spicy. For her vegan veggie burger today, she starts off with lots of roasted veggies, onions and peppers. She also bakes the pinto beans in the oven until they split open. When she's ready to mix up the burgers in the food processor, she needs a binding agent that takes the place of the eggs. So she's reserved the liquid from the pinto beans and measured out a quarter cup. That equals one egg.
Yeah, and you can actually use it in baking as well as an egg substitute. The traditional egg substitute, the powdery stuff, is, I think, a little more processed than I would like, so I've also started working with that, and it works really well in vegan baking.
We're with her in her function brewing kitchen, where things get spicy right away.
We are also going to add 4 chipotle chilies to this food processor as well. 3/4 3/4 of a cup of breadcrumbs. You can certainly just buy panko. We produce so much excess bread by being a sandwich-oriented restaurant. We make as many croutons as we possibly can, but we still have extra bread, so we're always figuring out what we can do with it. So this is Scholar's Inn multi-grain bread that I've processed in the food processor until it became crumbs. So it will work well, and it happens to also be a vegan bread, so we can stay on the vegan train. And then last but not least, we want 4 teaspoons of red wine vinegar. I'm just gonna let this go. We may need to periodically scrape down the sides. We're not looking for totally smooth, so if we are likening this to peanut butter, because it does kind of look like that, you basically want chunky peanut butter. So getting a little bit of that bean texture when you're eating it just reminds you of what went in it, which I think is very pleasant. I think the seasoning is just about right. We get a nice level of salty savoriness. There's definitely some heat in the very back of your throat from the chipotles. As I said, you could either stop here and put it away and cook it off when you're ready for dinner. Or in our case, we're going to go ahead and bake them off into little patties.
In a 325 oven for 8 minutes, these patties flatten out and dry up. You got a grill going, these work just as well over a flame.
So we're going to use some marble rye. This bread is not actually vegan, so it won't be used if this was the vegan version of this sandwich with the avocado, but since we're going to put the cheese on this, we'll go ahead and use the marble rye because I just really like the flavor. So we are spreading the roasted garlic aioli on both sides of the rye bread. We're going to go ahead and put this veggie burger on the slice of bread, one of the slices of bread that has that roasted garlic aioli on it. We're going to top it with a little bit of that Good Life arugula and some pickled jalapenos. We just make them in-house with just vinegar and sea salt, so they are, and they're never cooked, they're refrigerator pickles, so they're very spicy. I definitely recommend making your own pickled jalapenos because not only is it super easy, you're not dealing with a complicated brine, as I said, just vinegar and salt. I think you end up with a superior product because it doesn't get cooked, so it doesn't get mushy.
I see you, jalapeno seeds. This is gonna be hot.
It's a little spicy, yep. But you know, that's how we roll around here. All right, so pickled jalapenos, and then we're topping this with pepper jack and our other piece of rye bread that has that roasted garlic aioli. We're gonna pop this on a panini press. You could certainly do this in a saute pan on your stove. Veggie burger, because it was already hot, or at least warm, isn't cold in the center, so we're not going to need to cook it for too long. We're just looking for that cheese to start melting. So I'd say this is done, and this should be a burger you can really feel good about eating.
That roasted garlic aioli, we have that recipe too. Also check out Arlen Llewellyn's deviled eggs with a touch of beets. That's in our archives. Over the next couple weeks, we're going to town with corn on the website. First up, sweet corn ice cream at eartheats.org. Production support for Earth Eats comes from Charles Schwab & Company Incorporated, with a local branch on Morton Street in Bloomington. Independent branch leader Jeremy Zeichner, CFP, offers personalized financial plans matched to investors' goals. More at schwab.com/Bloomington. Elizabeth Rue, enrolled agent and owner of Personal Financial Services, providing tax preparation for individuals and businesses, located on the Beeline Trail. More information at personalfinancialservices.net. And Need More Coffee Roasters, a woman-owned coffee bar and roastery dedicated to roasting organic, direct trade, and fair trade coffee from small-scale farmers around the world. On the east side of Bloomington, corner of Pete Ellis and Longview, needmoreroasters.com. Good times. Thanks for listening. I'm Annie Corrigan.